Blog Talk Radio.
Rivetti, what's up?
I'm sorry, sir. It's just a difference of opinion that got out of hand.
What about?
It's really too silly to talk about, sir. I'd rather just forget about it.
I don't give a damn about what you'd rather forget about. Why were you two fighting?
Well, I said that the Kirby Silver Surfer was the only real Silver Surfer, and that the Mobius Silver Surfer was shit. And Benefield's a big Mobius fan, and things got out of hand. I pushed him, he pushed me. I lost my head, sir. I'm sorry.
Rivetti, you're a supervisor. You can get a commission like that.
I know it, sir. You're 100% right. It's never happened again.
It better not happen again. I see this kind of nonsense, I'm going to write you up. You understand? Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
You have to set an example even in the face of stupidity. Now, everybody that reads comic books knows that Kirby Silver Surfer is the only true Silver Surfer. Now, am I right or wrong?
You're right, sir.
All right. Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in the cosmos, where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. It's Afro Nerd here. And yet another edition of Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternerd Radio. The time, 7.02 p.m., the date, September 5th, 2012, and we're off to the races. Charlotte, North Carolina, we have the Democratic National Convention. We know that the Republicans had theirs last week, so now it's the Dems' turn. We're going to talk about it. It's a lot to talk about. It appears that our First Lady did a stellar performance. Let me repeat that. First Lady Michelle Obama did a stellar performance among other Democrats. You must give it up. Even as a conservative, I must admit what I did witness. Not too many complaints per se, but there's some fact-checking on both sides of the fence, folks. Let me repeat that. There's some fact-checking that needs to be done on both sides of the fence. We have a fully packed show for you, 90 minutes, so let's just get into it. Speaking of what both conventions represent as we go into this funk break. This is an oldie but goodie, Biz Markie. Remember, we do urban alternative music here. Biz Markie, the doo-doo. The doo-doo. Let's groove.
Started. Come on. Yo. Yo, this is named the doo-doo. And I, you know, to me it's funky. Yo, to me it's funky, but I call it the doo-doo. Not because it smells like doo-doo, because it's like the beat is the doo-doo. So bring it down. One, two, and don't forget the three, and oh, what a relief for this rubies of this as being. Being human orchestra, one man band, a fresh funky rhyme player, beat player, and a disco like kingin'. While my legs are swinging as I do my own dance that I came bringing to all the hip hoppers in 1986 with my partner Jesus Juan. Cool be on the mix and Big Daddy Kanan as we entertaining, making the records so that we can be raining on top, say rocking from my state fader, making people party on down as I create a harmony, charmony, whole audience, and just say like say grooving and proving and like a Vincent. All the competition that try to compete, but me the Biz Markie can't be beat. That's why I rock my house to get dope. Yo, 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 yo. I just like to say a couple of names, and the names go like this. To my man, to my man, to my big boss. Live my house and cut that the cool beat. Rock my house and speak that again. Rock my house and DJ Swan. Rock my house, can't forget Molly Ball. Rock my house and squat down. Rock my house and dress Afro. Rock my house and McGraw. Rock my house and Mr. Magic. Rock my house and Gucci Rap. Rock my house, can't forget DJ Polo. Rock my house and MC Jam. Rock my house and Roxanne Shante. Rock my house and Utah. Rock my house and can't forget Chess. Rock my house, can't forget my man PJ. Rock my
The Doo-Doo. Just having a little bit of fun, folks. Again, that was classic hip-hop artist Biz Markie, The Doo-Doo. And I played that in homage to both conventions. Folks, fact-checking abound. As much as I enjoyed the Democratic Convention, I must confess, a lot more emotionalism, tugging at the heart, a lot more kowtowing to tribalism, and it is what it is. I enjoyed it. I thought they did an excellent job. They are there to fight against the Republicans, and they're doing an admirable job. However, the Republicans are not out of it yet. There's a lot of things going on, folks. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I could not do the show, not effectively, without Captain Kirk. Captain, you are needed on the bridge. Let's get into it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Captain.
How do you read me?
You're a little low, sir.
All right. How do you read
well,
me now?
The captain's in the field, by the way, but you're okay. We can hear you. You might come across better, actually, when it's actually out there being broadcast. To me, you're coming kind of low.
Okay. I'm going to
skip the information. I hear you a little bit now.
Good.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to skip the informational diatribe and just get into the rock concert that we've seen over the last couple of days. To start the show and discuss this rock concert, Republican and Democrat rock concert. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yes, it's interesting that you put it that way, Captain, because I will confess I enjoyed what I was looking at. It was somewhat riveting. It was emotional. You know, we always go to that clip with Halle Berry, make me feel good, make me feel good. A lot of it is involved with that. We know what it is. I mean, let's face it, both parties do this, but the Democrats have a lock, especially when it comes to people of color. When it comes down to pulling out the heartstrings and really getting into emotionalism, making an emotional connection, the Democrats have that element down pat. So I must commend them on their ability to do that. But it was a rock concert. I mean, they had Ledisi, who we play on this show. Ledisi was a performer there. Will.i.am was in full effect. John Leguizamo. Tim Daly. We know Tim Daly is Time Daly's brother, a famed director, actor, also the voice of Superman for the comic shop crew, as well as Alfre Woodard. I mean, it's Hollywood. It's in full effect. I mean, the Democrats put on a better show. Let's be realistic about that. They put on a better show. I saw that some of the Republican commenters were reluctant to give it up to what they were seeing. These people are in a fight for their lives, and they're coming with it. Being honest. I believe in honesty above being partisan. Honesty is above partisanship, and in this case, we saw that these people brought it. Michelle Obama was a sight. She was beautiful, lovely dress, refined. That's the way I want to see black women. That is the quintessential black woman, I would say. I didn't see any hair hats, no Afro-Saxon toupees, Captain. I didn't see that. Excellent articulation. This is a woman from Chicago, Harvard breeding. She knows how to lay it down. She spoke up for her husband. She made an impassioned plea, as we had expected her to do. Actually, the hidden secret, I suspect, is that she is one of the powerhouses of the Obama administration. That's something that I think not too many people – well, I think people, the public, are slowly becoming aware of that. And she's actually more popular than Barack Obama. There's actually no comparison between herself and Ann Romney. Ann Romney can't hold a candle to Michelle Obama, so I have to give it up. Now, so what I want to do before we get into the highlights, our own impressions, Captain, I do want to play a ABC News clip of the DNC highlights, and then we will unpack it for our audience. Again, folks, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, the Midweek and Review Show, the call-in number, don't be scared, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have a lot to get into on top of the DNC. So let's get into the ABC News clip. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's get into it.
Michelle Obama, the First Lady, rallied the troops in an emotional character portrait of her husband last night.
Yeah, it was designed to highlight the differences between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Our coverage begins with ABC's Karen Travers live in Charlotte this morning. Hi, Karen.
Good morning, Paula. Good morning, Rob. Democrats call the First Lady the closer, and last night she made her sales pitch for her husband's reelection.
First Lady Michelle Obama brought down the house. Her speech was personal. She spoke about the president's values and judgment during challenging times.
Barack and I were both raised by families who didn't have much in the way of money or material possessions, but who had given us something far more valuable, their unconditional love.
Mrs. Obama said to keep the country moving forward, voters need to give her husband 4 more years. The First Lady's immensely popular, and Democrats hope her speech pays off immediately with a key voting group that the president needs in November. For the first time, more women disapprove of the president than approve. He's down 11 points since April. In addition to women, the president needs Latinos to turn out for him on Election Day. So for their keynote speaker, Democrats chose San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro. Like the president, Castro was raised by a single mom, went to Harvard Law, and now he's an up-and-comer in the Democratic Party.
My mother fought hard for civil rights so that instead of a mop, I could hold this microphone.
Castro said the Republican ticket just doesn't get it.
We all understand that freedom isn't free. What Romney and Ryan don't understand is that neither is opportunity. We have to invest in it.
Tonight's main event, former President Bill Clinton. His speech is aimed at those 2008 Obama voters who were unhappy, but they're undecided now and they might be persuadable. Robin Paula.
All right, Karen, I heard somebody say regarding the First Lady's speech and whether or not she got the job done. She said, of course, I love Barack more now than I did 4 years ago. The problem is a lot of people don't feel the same. Did she get the job done with her speech and kind of pulling in maybe those disenchanted voters?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Paula, if you just judged it by the reaction in the room, she certainly won them over. But you're right. That's not who she's reaching out to. She's trying to reach those voters at home who are still a little bit iffy right now on the president, but they're not really sure that they would switch to Mitt Romney as well. This speech was personal. She talked about her biography. She talked about the values that she and the president share. But it was also partisan. It was political, but it was very subtly political. She did not mention the word Romney at all in her speech tonight, but it was clear at times who she was talking about. She said that the president values success not by how much money you've made, but how much of an influence you've had. And she said that growing up, her and the president were taught that success is something that you get through opportunity and something opportunity that you need to have invested in you. And that that is clear. She's trying to draw the contrast between the speeches that were said at the Republican convention last week. But, of course, we'll be seeing over the next couple of days whether or not she was able to make that pitch to the viewers at home.
And, again, you know, obviously it was a very heartfelt reach out to women voters and to the middle class for sure. Those are some key voters in this. But also the issue of small businesses, because last week we heard the Republicans talk about "we built this," which was in response to earlier comments by the president. How are Democrats responding to that whole "we built this" attitude?
Rob, they came up with a slogan of their own, and you saw it on signs and fans in the room tonight. "We made it possible." That was also echoed tonight in Julian Castro's speech. Basically, Republicans said that when the president said that, you know, government helped you build your small business, they thought that the president was taking credit for entrepreneurship and the president was taking credit for people trying to build their own small business. Well, tonight and the rest of this week, Democrats are going to say it's the small people in that are part of those companies. It's the worker. It's the working class voters that made that possible. If you're successful with your small business, somebody helped you, and they're saying it's a Democratic voter that did that.
All right, Karen, First Lady's going to be a tough act to follow. What do you expect from the former president, Bill Clinton, tonight?
Well, tonight, Bill Clinton will be speaking. He has the stage all to himself. He is the biggest event. Now, this is a speech that they're hoping reminds people of what it was like to have a Democratic president elected to a second term. He's going to remind Americans about the prosperous times of the late 90s. But, Rob Paulett, there's a bit of a risk there. Bill Clinton is immensely popular. You don't want to remind people how popular he is and make them wish he was the president, not Barack Obama.
Bill does have a tendency to own the room when he gets up there. He's known
absolutely
for his speeches, so we'll see how that plays out. Thanks to ABC's Karen Travers, live for us again in Charlotte this morning. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
And we're going to bring you more from Charlotte later this half hour to see how Democrats are wined and dined. Our live coverage returns tonight at 10 Eastern with former President Bill Clinton's big speech, day two. Here.
All right, folks, once again, that was ABC News giving us the DNC Democratic National Convention highlights from yesterday. Again, we're going into day two. Tomorrow we're expecting, of course, POTUS, the President of the United States, to speak. Today we're looking at the, and I say in quotes, the first black president, Bill Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton. And as the clip noted, there's this issue of will he bring the place down? I mean, listen, he's there to do a job just as Michelle Obama, but he is so charismatic that he may go into what it was like in the 90s. Great deal of success, a great deal of financial stability. And one may think, well, you know, why don't we have this gentleman into it again? why don't we see him now? There may be a clear demarcation. I mean, he has to remind the audience and remind prospective voters that Barack Obama is at the helm. Support him. Let's not go down memory lane too much. And we start to lull and we start to, you know, lament that we are no longer in the 90s. So he has to have a balancing act of I support this president and there's things about this president that are reminiscent of what we were trying to do. But let's not stay in memory lane so long that you turn off the voter. And also something that was interesting to note was that his – speech was not vetted. So we really do not know. We do not know, and I suspect Barack Obama does not really know what former President Bill Clinton will say. There's always that chance, hey, they did it with Clint Eastwood last week where they did not vet him. And now we're still talking about this invisible Obama or invisible Obama's chair. So you don't know what to expect. More things to even get into. Unquestionably, as I said at the top of the show, the Democratic Convention knows how to tug at the heartstrings. All about tribalism before, I've had my issues with people of color, specifically black folks, that vote a little bit too much in the 90-plus percentile range for the Democrats. Not that black people should not support Democrats, but when you support the Democratic Party 90%, and having a black person at the helm, listen, I understand the pull of tribalism. Even I go out in and out of tribalism on occasion. I understand what it means this time around. But at some point, we're going to have to be a bit more sophisticated with our voting and learn to understand how politics really works. It's all about appealing to certain bases. It's about being in the game, and it's about being a part of the constituency. If the Democrats do not win this time around, and it is a distinct possibility that this could happen in November, if by some chance that President Barack Obama does not get a second term, what leverage will we have with the new administration when we did not make up a part of his constituency? Whether you love or hate the Republicans, you will still have to deal with them for 4 to 8 years potentially. So you need to have some kind of leverage, some kind of presence in the Republican Party. When you speak to some folks of color, they close their eyes, they cover their ears, they do not want to hear the reality of politics. A lot more to get into. Let's hear from Captain Kirk. I want to get his impressions of the convention. He rightfully dubbed it a rock concert. In a way, it really was. It was a bit more entertaining, full confession, entertaining than the Republican convention from last week. The Republicans, somewhat stiff. So let's get into it. Captain, what are your thoughts about yesterday's part one of the DNC?
Can you read me, Sir D. Burke?
Yes.
Okay. Now, just to build on that earlier thought as far as the rock concert is concerned, it's a rock concert called Misdirection. Let me repeat that. It's a rock concert called Misdirection. Essentially, at this given point, America is going down and down and down and down. Now, whether you prefer Romney or whether you prefer Obama, their policies are all the same across the board. All the people there in Congress.
Okay, folks, it looks like we missed the captain. The captain is going to have – let me see if he'll call back in a few moments. Again, the captain, Captain Kirk, is in the field. It looks like we lost his connection. Our apologies for that, folks. These things do happen. You know what? Let's go to a musical break while he comes back into the fold. I do want to hear his opinion on this being a rock concert. A lot more information to go out there. I want to discuss more of the impeccable speakers. Full confession time. Julian Castro, the mayor of San Antonio, Texas. Impressive. Harvard Law. He appears to be the brown version of Barack Obama. Where Barack Obama came in 2004 and was impressive, and next thing you know, now he is sitting in the White House. There's talk that this young man, who has a twin, incidentally, Julian Castro, might be the next man of color if things work out the way that they may work out. Okay, here's the captain. Let me scratch that musical break. Here he is. Let's get back into it. Captain, you broke off for a moment.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay,
let me
start from the top again. All right. I said it's a rock concert called Misdirection. Let me repeat that. A rock concert called Misdirection. Whether you're for Obama or whether you're for Romney, America is going down a path that does not benefit the American people, all right, at this given point. Now, you say, how so, Captain? If we change the president, things should change. No! All right? Romney's policy is on the same thing that you see. He has the same exact policy that Obama has pertaining to the same things that come on TV every day. Okay, when we talk about Syria, Iran, Israel, the Fed that makes us broker and broker. The Fed is a privatized institution that we cannot audit. Rothschild Bank all over the world. Nothing changes. So if you look from 2001 to now, the American people have gotten poorer and poorer and poorer. So essentially, this is just a rock concert of misdirection because at the end of the day, it really does not matter which president goes in there. And the same people for all the people in Congress, they're on the same playing field. Everyone's just playing the same game. It's the dumb Americans that essentially don't understand or they just feel they're too They don't have enough power to make any change in which way, shape, or form. You understand? So the rock concert, the show is just put on, more or less, the rock concert called Misdirection, to make people just feel good. Ooh-ah, 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 ooh-ah. Now, at the end of the day, which person do you want raping the public? Do you prefer it to be Romney, the white guy, or do you prefer it to be Obama at the end of the day? That's the reality of it. And who are they raping the people for? Not for them, for the top of the food chain. All right? Just look at the Fed and follow the money. I say it on the show all the time. Follow the money and connect the dots. And you'll realize why you get poorer and poorer, why you pay this gas, why cars cost this, why your mortgage rate is this, and everything on and on and on and on and on. And there's not going to be any change. It has to get worse. You understand? Because there's nothing backing the money. It's called fiat money. So essentially, it has to get worse before it gets better. So it's just, who do you want? Who do you want? I say you go with the better speaker, which is Obama. He's a bit more polished than a Romney. You understand? Romney cannot match Obama word for word when it comes to speaking. So it's always better to go with the more polished individual. You understand? Also, Obama's younger than Romney at the end of the day. So there you go. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, I've said this before. I think right before we went into your diatribe, I was saying that the black voter is going to have to be a bit more. Well, let me even beyond voting. I'm going to talk about the voting part, alluding to the fact that we need to be more sophisticated. I mean that is correct. We do have to be more sophisticated if we're going to play this game. If we're playing this game that our forefathers died for, let's be honest about this, Captain. Our forefathers paid a hell of a price to give us the semblance of freedom in this country, culminating in the right to vote, culminating in the right to having free access to public accommodations. So we must honor that. So I think it's important for black people, specifically people of color, even beyond just black folks, but the color spectrum is concerned, we should be voting. But if you're going to vote, be a sophisticated voter. As I say about myself, I would consider myself an Obamacan. Some would probably call me a rhino, a Republican in name only. However, I have an independent spirit. I have a free mind. I consider myself a critical thinker. So I will vote for President Obama nationally, but for my local politics, I'm going to vote Republican. Now, even beyond that, whoever is in office, I don't know if I actually talked about this, Captain. Whoever is in office, black folks are going to have to learn how to deal. Now, what I mean by that is, on occasion, this show, and I suspect many shows, will go into this whole monologue about the Asian community being the alleged model minority. And I know having friends who are of Asian descent and my own research, many Asian Americans, because we're not talking about a monolith, respectfully, no one wants to be considered a monolith. Black folks have to get this message as well. We should not be considering ourselves a monolith. But in talking about Asian folk, many have an apprehension about the whole model minority aesthetic or the model minority brand. Some embrace that. Some reject that. That's fair. My own impressions, however, based on how they promulgate a certain cultural standard, they are, again, perception. The perception is preparedness, education, access, forward moving, regardless of who is in office. I personally believe, Captain, that black folk, specifically, if we're going to go by impressions, we are a bit too passionate politically, as if that's the only access to upward mobility. And politics are just a little too flim-flam for yours truly. Now, what I've seen in even beyond the Asian community, in certain immigrant groups who have a different goal, a different culture, a different perspective as to how they approach America. They come here, perception now, folks, perception, they come here to do business. They could care less, in theory, they could care less about who is in office, in theory. It appears that black folk are a bit, from my comfort level, are a bit too passionate politically and without shoring up the preparedness, the education, the business access to safeguard whoever is in office. It should not matter theoretically. It should not matter. Sure, you should have some interest in politics, I agree. But having so much passion where this is the only thing, it's almost as if how you see some, you know, if you go into the trope, Captain, if you go into the trope of the underclass black family that puts all their weight, all their pressure, all their hopes into their sons or son for athleticism or for some music career. Oh, he's got to make it. He's got to make it into music. He's got to get this athletic scholarship. He's got to make it to the NBA. I don't like that, Captain. Before we go to musical break, any thoughts on that? Don't you think that there's a certain degree of preparedness that we have to have, irrespective of who is in office?
I agree with you, absolutely. We need to have multiple lanes to the top. Multiple lanes to the top. More or less, you know, what it seems like we're waiting around for someone to come in and do for you what you should be doing for yourself. That's what. Ever since 1865, since we've been freed, and I freed you, and you're nothing more than a freed slave, that's what a lot of us, not all of us, some of us are doers. Do not get me wrong, it's not a blanket statement. But I would say most of us, that's what we've been waiting for, someone to come along and say, let me lead you to the promised land. Here you go, black man and brown man. This is what I'm going to do for you. You understand? But hey, no one doesn't have to come along and tell you to take care of your three kids with that woman that you had the three kids with. Maybe you should marry her since you have three kids with this woman. You know, something, just something, you know. That's just being a little intelligent at that given point. You understand? Maybe the thugging is not work. Someone doesn't have to come in to an office, a high political platform, and tell you that, oh, listen, the thugging does not work for you in the black community and the brown community. Maybe, you know, you should, before you start thugging, get the little Burger King job or the little whatever job and just, you know, work and work your way up and then, you know, maybe go to school or try different things. Maybe that'll work better for you. At least you will not be in jail. You don't have to sit around and wait for somebody to get into political office for that to happen. It's just wrong. It's just lack of intelligence on our part. Back over to you, Sir Affleberry.
Yeah, I couldn't agree anymore. I know that Dr. Cosby has gone into this quite a bit, where he says, and I'm paraphrasing here, where he will talk about the Nigerian who is blacker phenotypically. One can make the argument, if we're going to weigh blackness, because we seem to put blackness on a scale when we talk about President Obama, but if we're going to go play that game, the Nigerian man who is blacker than thou, phenotypically black from the tree bark of Africa, we get the impression, we get the perception that they will take that job at Burger King or at Mickey D's, work at the bottom, and at some point you see that he's a manager, and then some point beyond that you will see that he is an owner. I have seen this. They really believe in the American system. I've seen the brown man do this as well. Well, they will start at the bottom. They will do what is required. You know, if there's a course to take, if there's if they have to go through the process from ground zero, they will do it, and then you will see progress. There is an element, and listen, we know that it's cross racially too. I mean, we've seen this in other communities too, in the other lower tier aspects. I mean, it affects everybody. There's white folks that believe this fast track money thing too, but I think the numbers are not favorable, or I should say disproportionate, with black young folk, where they do not believe in the process and the fast money. We've been seeing this for 30 years now. The fast money is attractive, but it is what it is. It is fast money. You end up doing time, you have a record, and then you are persona non grata in public access. You can't move in society at that point. You have a scarlet letter A, Nathaniel Hawthorne. You have the scarlet letter A, and you can't move. All right, folks, listen. We'll come back, a bit more information about the Democratic National Convention. Part two is tonight. Right now, let's play a little bit of Herb Alpert, legendary jazz artist, Herb Alpert. City Terrace, let's groove.
Hi, I'm Chuck Norris, and this is my wife, Gina. We are here to talk about a growing concern we all share. If we look to history, our great country and freedom are under attack. We're at a tipping point, and quite possibly our country as we know it may be lost forever if we don't change the course our country is headed.
With our country at a crossroads, Chuck and I have asked ourselves what we can be doing to help support this great country we're blessed to live in, and how we can encourage our like-minded American brothers and sisters to unite and let their voices be heard. It is estimated that in the 2008 election, 30 million evangelical Christians stayed home on voting day, and Obama won the election by 10 million votes.
We know you love your family and your freedom as much as Gina and I do. And it is because of that we can no longer sit quietly or stand on the sidelines and watch our country go the way of socialism or something much worse.
Our only hope is for each of us to make sure we have not only registered to vote in the primary and the general elections for 2012, but to make sure our voices will be heard by casting our vote on Election Day.
As Edmund Burke said, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men and women do nothing. Our great president, Ronald Reagan, said, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction." We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same.
President Reagan went on to say that you and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We will preserve for our children this last best hope for man on earth, or we will sentence them to take the first step into 1,000 years of darkness. If we fail, at least let our children and our children's children say of us, "We justified our brief moment here. We did all that could be done."
Please stand with us. Let's unite for God and country, and may God continue to bless the United States of America. See you at the polls. Thank you.
Darkness, everybody! Everyone, darkness is spreading!
Captain, first up, folks, again, you were listening to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, Afternoon Radio. That was Herb Alpert, City Terrace. More groove. Listen, we play the best in urban alternative, black rock, afro-punk, acid jazz, progressive hip-hop, classic hip-hop. You know what we do. That clip that I just played after Herb Alpert was legendary martial artist and actor and now Texas nut, Chuck Norris and his wife talking about the end of all times. The end of all time. Beware of the darkness, everybody.
Darkness, everybody. Everyone, darkness is spreading.
Come on. Captain, I'm not, what do you think? What is that? What is that?
All right. Let me chop this up. Mr. And I'm talking about Mr. Jesus Christ here, Mr. Chuck Norris. How do you read me? Read me clear? How am I coming in?
You're clear.
Okay, thank you.
Darkness, everybody, everyone, darkness is spreading.
Now, there's one president that we had that I was really, really fond of, okay? That was JFK. But we saw what happened to him. He's a radical individual. He didn't want to play the game. Chuck Norris mentioned Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan got second thoughts. They sent a warning shot, for those of you who remember, those of you who are old enough to remember. They sent a warning shot to Ronald Reagan and said, "Listen, don't tell the American people about any secrets, any things that they don't really necessarily need to know. We need to keep the American people in the dark, because if you're a wage slave, you cannot be educated to the level as the master." If you remember during slavery, slaves, for most part, were not allowed to read. They found you reading, you'd be whipped, or they chop off a toe or finger. This is correct, because a slave cannot be educated to the level that the master is, because you may rebel. Your eyes get open. So they sent a warning shot to Ronald Reagan. So Chuck Norris, if he really connects the dots and stops just looking at the man in front of him, he must realize whether it's Romney or President Obama, if he believes that America is going to be 1,000 years of darkness. It doesn't matter whether it's going to be Romney or Obama. The fate will be the same because all these men play a game. They're just playing the game. And whatever their masters are, want them to do. And who are their masters? The bankers. You just have to connect the dot. So Chuck Norris here is really off base. Okay, he's off base. It won't be 1,000 years of darkness. It'll probably be 25 years of darkness, whether it's Romney or Obama. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at the end of the day. You're just picking on Obama because you rather have the white male shafting you because that's what you're used to. You understand? You don't have a problem with the white male shafting you. If it's the black man that's taking the orders of the powers that be, which are the bankers, you have a problem with that. As I said before, and this is a question that I asked somebody that was on this show, I said, is Obama just a scapegoat for all the steps after JFK that the presidents did? Is that the case? And obviously that is the case because you see all the backlash. Everything that goes wrong, Obama gets the backlash for it. Now, right now you're saying Obama will cause 1,000 years of darkness. It won't really be Obama if there's 1,000 years of darkness. He's just following orders. He's carrying it out. He's a scapegoat. It'll be the bankers, which you never address, that would cause 1,000 years of darkness, meaning which you could put Romney, you could put Hillary, notice I didn't say Hillary, you could put Hillary Clinton in that White House. You could put whoever you want in there, as long as they take orders from the bankers, you cannot check that Fed or anything else, you are going to go down this path. So someone such as Chuck Norris should realize this and speak out correctly. You're just a pawn of the misdirection, the part of the rock concert called misdirection that's fooling the American people. It's not Obama. It's not Romney. It's not Biden. It's not none of those individuals. It's not the judicial branch. It's not the executive legislative. None of that. It's not Congress. They're just taking orders of who controls the money. The money. Follow the money. Follow the money, American people. Actually, the American people would be a lot better off instead of listening to Chuck Norris, listen to AfroNerd Radio featuring Captain Kirk so you can get some knowledge, so you can look left and look right and really see what's actually going on in the world. Back over to you, Sir AfroNerd. Chop it up.
Yeah, you know, listen, dovetailing off what you just said, Captain, we do emphasize opening up that third eye. Case in point, I would implore our listenership to go to the Washington Post online, the famed newspaper, the Washington Post, and they actually have a fact-checking blog or a fact-checking section of their internet presence. Well, they go in a unbiased way as to who – you know, the truth of the matter on both sides. From last week's Republican National Convention, there was a fact-checking moment where people were being called to task for the statements and the statistics, the fuzzy math that they were referencing. And conversely, there's some fuzzy math going on with what was talked about last night and what will continue to be talked about undoubtedly tonight and tomorrow from the Democrats. My only problem is, and this is – I always try my hardest to be absolutely honest with our audience, Captain. As I said, I am a conservative. I am a registered Republican, but I'm not a sycophant. I will vote for President Obama for the second time, but it is highly likely I will vote Republican locally. Now, having said that, I like the image of the Obamas. I will go in and out of tribalism. It's not solely because he's black, because there have been other black folk that have gone for the presidency that I didn't feel had the chops. I feel that this man is intelligent. He has the chops. His wife also has the chops. He's not a bleeding heart liberal. The country will not allow it. If anything, he is trying his hardest. He is trying his hardest,
to channel President Clinton, who now people say unabashedly was a centrist. They give him the centrist moniker. They will not give President Obama the centrist moniker. In some circles, if you do the scholarship, on occasion they will refer to President Obama as a centrist. And I said this before he was really considered. Well, I should say at the point that he was being considered a serious candidate, I was saying to him. I said even then, he's clean, knowledgeable, polished. I hope he's a centrist. At best, I hope he's a centrist. So I feel that he is. And also, I think that because we are on an anti-minstrel campaign here at AfroNerd, let me repeat that, not just we are on an anti-minstrel campaign. We need President Obama for his representation because we cannot have the face of black folk being the clowns. Right now, I see lower tier minstrelsy all over the place. So just for – if we're going to be symbolic, if we're going to be honest about the symbolic nature of this presidency, I need to see this young man there for another 4 years if we're going to be tribal, if we're going to be honest about the symbolic nature of his presidency. But with going into – with Chuck Norris, being completely honest, as a kid of the 80s, I saw my fair share – and I patronized my fair share of Chuck Norris films. But on the flip side, I patronized his films because the real deal, martial artist and philosopher Bruce Lee, had died. So Norris owes his career to Chuck Norris. I mean, sorry, to – pardon me. Norris owes his career to Bruce Lee, undoubtedly. He sucks. He sucks. And this right here, to me, is more about race. And I don't like to go to race all the time. You can't go to race to everything. But for this, for Obama to be the Antichrist, which is what they're saying in some fashion, another 4 years, it promises 1,000 years of darkness. Come on. It sounds silly. It really does. And what makes it even more disingenuous, Captain, is that he doesn't mention Mitt Romney. What happens if Mitt Romney – obviously he's imploring folks to come out, for the evangelical Christians to come out and vote. He's saying that he's not saying Mitt Romney directly, but indirectly he's saying to vote for Mitt Romney. However, he's no fan of Mitt Romney either. There's report that he was quite dismissive of Romney by stating that he was a flip-flopping Massachusetts moderate. So he doesn't believe in centrism either. All good things come to those who are in moderation, however the adage goes. He called Romney a flip-flopping Massachusetts moderate. So to have a flip-flopper Massachusetts moderate, if he's in there, we can expect that the darkness will be assuaged. But if we have President Obama, oh, yeah, that darkness is coming. Come on. Come on. We have to stop this. Something else I want to mention before we move along. I don't want to stay too long on the DNC. I mentioned that Yeah, sure.
All right. This is what I want to say. If we look back on the presidents after, just say after Kennedy, forget about Kennedy, just after Kennedy, blow for blow, verb for verb, verbiage for verbiage, all right, analogy versus analogy. Standing on stage, who stands up to Obama? Clinton probably could stand up. Maybe Carter. Maybe. So the reality of it is, this is a popularity contest. Obama's nice. Let's call a spade a spade. Obama is nice. All right? Obama is nice. That's the reality of it. He's not an average guy. He's not a Bush who was just average at best. He's nice. He's nice. Let's call a spade a spade. And normally, as a black person, you get any high-powered position, you have to be 2 to 3 times better than your peer left to the left and the right of you, in front of you and behind you. That's what it is, because they set the bar higher for us because they really don't want us there. So the reality of the situation is the man is nice. He's nice. Those policies are not his. Those are the powers that be. Romney, you're not nice. You're not nice. You're not nice with it. You're there with it. You are there with it, but you're not nice with it. You're not nice. Me, personally, I prefer to see someone who's nice. Give me Jordan. You understand? Don't give me the guy that comes off the bench that looks nice and everything, looks a little nice and everything. But when he actually wants time for you to play, you're not nice. That's all I have to say. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, what I wanted to just to mention briefly before we go into the next topic is that there were quite a few highlights on the show, of course, during the convention. Of course, we had the First Lady coming in toward the end of last night's show, and she brought down the house. Let's be frank. She knows how to pull out the heartstrings. She knows how to really emote. And the secret, the hidden secret, the well-known secret would be that she is as competent or maybe more so than Barack Obama, truth be told. Who knows what the future holds for her politically, because she's still a young woman. And she came out refined, lovely dress. The dress was talked about as well as her speech. You had a female soldier who lost both her legs and her arm in an attack, and she was going on about veterans' rights. You had I have a clip from this person as well, the former governor of Ohio, Ted Strickland, who, now I believe actually his speech was not fully televised. I don't know why, because he was perhaps the most aggressive out of everyone, and he was really going in on Romney. Again, folks, go to Washington Post. We try to be, look down the middle on these matters. Just full disclosure, full honesty. Both parties are fudging the numbers to get your vote. That's problematic. You know, one of the first things that was mentioned during last week's Republican convention on the part of the Democrats was, there needs to be some fact-checking. Well, now it's your turn on the Democratic side, folks, because they need some fact-checking. Go to WashingtonPost.com, check out their fact-checker blog segment, an ongoing thing. Anyway, Ted Strickland was bringing it to Mitt Romney on a personal level. So I would actually want to play this. As I mentioned earlier, Julian Castro, the San Antonio mayor, is phenomenal, but he's also setting himself up the way that President Obama was setting himself up in 2004, so we see that commonality. There was some Cory Booker, eloquent, also Ivy League educated, trying to curry favor with the Obamas also. He said some things about Bain Capital. You know, he went off message for a moment a few months ago, and he got the cold shoulder from the Obama administration. So this is his way of getting back. This is when you get back. This is when you get into some of what politics is about, really about, folks. As affable as President Obama is, if you do not stay on message, you are on the outs. So as polished as Cory Booker is, mayor of Newark, he was on the outs for a minute. So he brought him back in. Now he's back on message. So don't – on the left or on the right, you see how this works. On the left or on the right, you must stay on message. Anyway, before we go to the next topic, I want you to hear a skosh of former Governor of Ohio, Ted Strickland, bringing it hard and specific to Mitt Romney. Hold on.
Mitt Romney proudly wrote an op-ed entitled, "Let Detroit go bankrupt." You know, if he had had his way, devastation would have cascaded from Michigan to Ohio and across the nation. Mitt Romney never saw the point of building something when he could profit by tearing it down. If Mitt was Santa Claus, he would fire the reindeer and outsource the elves. Mitt has so little economic patriotism that even his money needs a passport. It's summers on the beaches of the Cayman Islands and winters on the slopes of the Swiss Alps. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 21, the scriptures teach us that where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And my friends, any man who aspires to be our president should keep both his treasure and his heart in the United States of America. And you know, it's well past time for Mitt Romney to come clean with the American people on what he's saying about the president's policy for welfare to work. He's lying. As simple as that. And on his tax returns, he's hiding. You know, you have to wonder just what is so embarrassing that he's going to such great lengths to bury the truth. But whatever he's doing to avoid taxes, can it possibly be worse than the Ryan Romney tax plan that would have sliced Mitt's total tax rate to less than 1%.
All right. Once again, folks, that was Ted Strickland, former governor of Ohio. And listen, they're bringing hot fire, as they say on the street, folks. The Democrats are bringing hot fire. He says Mitt Romney would fire the reindeers and outsource the elves. That has to be the line of the night. That has to be the line of the night. So, you know, being in full disclosure, the Democrats are very adept at theatrics. And this is what's going on right now. If this is why on the outside you hear the Republicans fuming and they're banging on the door. Because right now, what they're saying now is that the original 70,000 seat arena, outdoor arena, that President Barack Obama was supposed to give his closing speech for Thursday, that has been canceled because of expected inclement weather. They're expecting thunder and lightning. Now, the Democrats are stating this. The Republicans are saying, no, that's not the truth. The truth is that the gap of enthusiasm between what happened in 2008 and 2012 is so severe that they can only get about 20,000 people for the indoor arena. Now, we don't know which way is true, but this is what the Republicans are claiming. They're trying to put that out there. I'm led to believe that perhaps there is a warning. I mean, it would be catastrophic if it was some kind of, you know, an outdoor arena and it's thunder and lightning. I can understand that, but it's not about being truthful. The Republicans are throwing it out there anyway. Anything to take this man down. So even though they're having these kind of speeches, because they're bringing it to the Republicans hard, so they have to bring it back equally. The Democrats have the mic right now. So they're claiming that. Now there's this whole hullabaloo about the platform having been changed, that initially Israel, mentioning of Israel and God specifically, were not in the Democratic platform. Now they are putting it in the Democratic platform, and some Democrats
are critical of that or critiquing that, that you should not be putting God and Israel, but I think God more specifically, but they're mentioning both. That why are you mentioning these two things? But listen, you better mention God. You better mention God, because if you don't, the Republicans surely will get a handle on that. So this thing, this chaos going on, and there's going to be chaos because the Democrats are bringing it to them. If they have a strong night tonight, like last night, and even a stronger night for the closing night, we are going to see a bounce. The bounce that Mitt Romney had has already been erased. He did go up about 2 or 3 percentage points. It's already gone. So this is really a spectacular affair. If it's really a spectacular affair, you can expect a bounce for President Obama coming out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And one more thing, MSNBC desperately wants to be Fox, and it looks like they're on their way. They actually had the highest ratings, I think, in its history, over 4 million viewers, and then CNN came in second, and then Fox came in third. But the way their histrionics, they are definitely Fox on the left, and they're trying to be that way. CNN is a bit more coy about their progressive bent. They're a bit more coy. MSNBC, not so much. MSNBC is unabashedly progressive, just as Fox is unabashedly on the right. So it's interesting to see that throughout all their histrionics, that MSNBC, with all their opinions, they have Reverend Sharpton there, Rachel Maddow, who I actually like. Rachel Maddow was Oxford trained. She's a young woman, Oxford trained. She's very knowledgeable. I take knowledge above everything else. She is extremely knowledgeable, and she can go toe to toe with the best of them. Reverend Al, whatever. But you can see what's going on. They're desperately trying to be the progressive answer to Fox, and I think they might be accomplishing that. All right, Captain, let's go to a more light note, at least light for us. I want to talk about this is where we get into an actual Afro nerd, more of an Afro nerdic conversation. DC Comics this Wednesday just released, or I should say debuted, its first Arab American, I don't know if it's the first Arab American hero, but the first Arab American Green Lantern. His name is Simon Baz. And I know we covered this a little bit on the comic shop, but I find it interesting that, you know, these comic book storylines, they make major news now. You know, years ago, comic books were, you know, they were childish fodder. But now, any major event is covered in the news. So this got quite a few mentions in major newspapers about this Arab American take on Green Lantern, the official Green Lantern, or the more popular one that was depicted last year by Ryan Reynolds. Hal Jordan, the character Hal Jordan, is the one that many folks know. John Stewart is the African-American Green Lantern. Many folks know him as well. Those two are on the outs for the moment, at least in the storyline briefly. They're on the outs for the moment, and now this Arab-American Green Lantern has emerged, and a lot of it has to do with, obviously, a plea to multiculturalism, a plea to the 21st century, and the creator of this storyline, Geoff Johns, just so happens to be Lebanese. So he tapped into his own cultural underpinnings and decided to highlight there being an Arab-American Green Lantern. I just so happened to pick up the book this afternoon. It is a great storyline. Daryl B. took some umbrage with this because he thought there was some stereotyping going on. This Green Lantern has a gun. Why would a Green Lantern need a gun when the ring itself is allegedly the most powerful weapon in the universe, according to the storyline. So, and he's also an accused terrorist, by the way. He's not really a terrorist. That, I must confess, makes interesting storytelling. One of those cases where he is being mischaracterized as a terrorist, but he is a Green Lantern at the same time. So that's, I think that's very interesting. Captain, what are your thoughts on DC's this new drive to have multiculturalism, which I think is admirable, but specifically an Arab-American Green Lantern or an Arab-American high-profile hero? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, here's the first thing we have to address. You know, something that you mentioned earlier, how this thing comes out in the news and it's a big deal. Well, it essentially belongs to pop culture at this given time. That's what it is. It's all over the internet, plastered. A couple of newspapers run it. You know, you see the blurbs in a few regular newspapers that you pick up. You know, so it essentially, at this given point, it belongs to pop culture. So it's going to be a big deal. Now, this to me is more or less just like what these writers like to do from time to time. They come out with this to shake up the waters. Maybe there'd be like 10 books, and then this Green Lantern ends up in some alternate dimension getting imprisoned somewhere, and then you don't hear about him for a while, and then maybe they bring him back at a later date. You know, that seems like the type of thing, the way they like to go. But it's interesting. It's interesting, you know, just to shake up the waters a little bit and draw people in. That's what we're doing here. That's why we're talking about it. If it was just maybe a regular Green Lantern, we might not have brought it into this show. We've mentioned it on Comic Shop, but it's necessary because he's Arab-Lebanese and everything that's going on at the given time over in that area. So it has to be talked about on the AfroNerd show featuring Captain Kirk. You see how that works? So that might be a smart ploy on their part. But we'll see when the numbers come back in 30 days how it looks. Of course, we'll be talking more about that in the Comic Shop when the numbers come back in. Back over to you, Sir AfroNerd.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to note the progression of the ubiquity of comic book lore in the national realm, or I should say even international realm. Just, you know, a few years back, there was definitely not this impetus to notify the public about all things pulp. And the captain is correct that it is now part of pop culture, generalized public pop culture. But anything that, you know, whether it's the revelation of someone's secret identity, whether someone comes out sexually, we've seen that, whether there's some marriage thing, you know, anything that is, I guess, of some that signifies some kind of event, mind you, folks, in comic books, gets, it's not a front page story, but like page two, page three, fairly high in the newsroom. I guess also because of the success of many of these films. One thing I would like to say, though, I would definitely implore our listenership, especially those who are more on the nerdic geek end of things, to definitely pick up this book. And all the other Green Lantern books, the Green Lantern, for whatever reason, did not translate that well to the silver screen. I guess they're probably going to reboot that at some point, or at least evaluate the plausibility of rebooting it. But the comics themselves, even this particular issue, this is issue zero of Green Lantern. So they're really starting from the beginning with this new character. But the actual storyline, the way that it works, it's very cinematic, just reading it. And I don't want to give too much away. You're going to have to pick up the book. But if you do pick up the book, how he becomes a Green Lantern and the fact that he is being mischaracterized by the government, I'll tell you that much, by the government, he's a young man also. Just one quick thing, as a child, I guess preteen, they show his family, his Arabic family, witnessing 9/11 like every other American family on television, and how their lives subsequently changed from outside prejudice because they were simply of Islamic extraction, of the Islamic faith. And then now we're talking about 11 years later, and he ends up becoming a Green Lantern. And also, he, in the midst of becoming a Green Lantern, is being mischaracterized by the government as a terrorist. So there's a lot going on here. I will confess, as far as being a fascinating read, being a compelling read, there's a lot going on here for this particular character. Again, Simon Baz as the next Green Lantern. All right, more Muzak. We always have to give you some groove before we get into the discourse. I want to play some – actually, you know what? Maybe I'll go out in the closing on this one. I was going to play a song that's very personal, actually. Let's go to some Lenny Kravitz. No. Let me change my mind on that. Another classic, I Adore You. I Adore You by Karen Wheeler. UK's Karen Wheeler. We'll be back. Let's get into it.
tell me what you want me to do. You want me to take you out of here? Just let you run away? See how far you could get?
Why would you do such a foolish thing?
On the day of my judgment, when I stand before God, and he asks me, why did I kill one of his true miracles? What am I going to say? That it was my job. It was my job.
You tell God the Father it was the kindness you done. I know you're hurting in word. I can feel it on you. But you ought to quit on it now. I want it to be over and done with. I do. I'm tired, boss. Tired of being on the road, lonely as a sparrow in the rain. I'm tired of never having me a buddy to be with, to tell me where we's going to, coming from, or why. Mostly I'm tired of people being ugly to each other. I'm tired of all the pain I feel and hear in the world every day. There's too much of it. It's like piece of glass in my head all the time. Can you understand?
All right, folks, once again, that was Karen Wheeler, I Adore You. And that was from the Mo Money soundtrack from quite a few years ago, the Damon Wayans vehicle from a few years back. And that clip was from the Green Mile, 1999's Green Mile, with the late, great, Oscar-nominated Michael Clark Duncan, who passed away untimely, obviously, at 54 years of age a few days ago. And he was a mountain of a man, 6'5", 300 pounds, 300-plus pounds. I think he was 350 and change. So he was a huge guy, 54 years of age, still relatively young, far too young to expire from a heart attack. And after viewing that clip, and I'm sure after even listening to it, you realize that this man really, really had the chops. He attended Alcorn State University for a brief spell as a communications major. And early on, he did have the acting bug. I don't think he was necessarily formally trained. But when you see how he was able to stand toe-to-toe with Tom Hanks, who has won countless awards, you know, he is – initially he came out – even Tom Hanks came out as a comedic actor in the Bosom Buddies TV show in the early 80s. But he has modeled himself as one of the great actors in Hollywood. Just as Denzel is one of the great actors. But when you see, especially in this film, Michael Clark Duncan, Duncan was something. Duncan was something, and it's unfortunate he died this way, died so young. And unfortunately, we're not going to have enough time. I did want to talk about this new study. I saw a recent New York Times piece that talked about the efficacy of middle-aged fitness. That as you go get into your late 30s, early 40s, and beyond, it becomes even more imperative to be physically fit, that it will forestall or stave off a lot of these issues. And unfortunately, now, of course, Duncan was a muscle-bound guy, but it did look like in later years that he was getting a bit heavy around the midsection, that he was carrying a lot of weight. And I would have liked to have seen him really – slim down a bit, because frankly, when you get older, even age is kind of speculative sometimes, Captain. Just being too heavy, period, even if you're somewhat muscular, your body just cannot withstand that kind of weight. We saw Patrice O'Neill, great comedian, who died, I believe, at just 40. He was in his early, I think he just turned 40, 41. Young man, he was obese. He had struggled with weight, and being African American, it seems like African American people, especially African American men, carrying a lot of weight, it's not the answer. Well, Rosie O'Donnell, not African-American, early 50s, and she too had a heart attack, but it appears the survival rate for Caucasians is greater than it is for people of color. So I'm just tired of seeing our young folk, black people, dying when they need not die. We can talk about, oh, it's your time. It's your time. I understand that, but I don't quite believe that in many cases. This man had the means, the financial means, definitely, to get a hold of this. I mean, he was already an athlete. So if he had trimmed down maybe 60, 70 pounds, might have been still around with us, making more movies, might have been for the better. What do you think, Captain, as far as we got about 2 minutes regarding Michael Clark Duncan?
Well, from a statistical analysis, people who are bigger do not live as long as people who are slimmer, who are smaller. We have that going in, and also pertaining to him, Michael Duncan. And it might have been an existing heart condition. And we remember the great runner, Jim Fix, who put out all the running books. When he eventually died, the doctor said if it wasn't for all his running, he would have died 10 years earlier. He was taken out pretty much early, too. And they said it was the running that kept him going because he had an existing heart problem. Sometimes these things do not go diagnosed, even though these individuals go to the doctor, because they seem physically fit, and sometimes doctors do miss things. So we have the size that he was. That's number one. That's more stress on the system. And also he might have had a pre-existing heart condition that maybe he did not know about it and just finally began to manifest. So more things will come out down the line, and we'll see exactly what it is, where they'll tell you the exact cause. They're saying that natural causes at this given time, but it might be a little bit more than that. Back over to you, Sir Aphrodite.
Okay, folks, listen. Absolute pleasure, our midweek and review show. Kudos to Captain Kirk. For Sunday's show, stay tuned. We have Justin Simeon of Dear White People fame. He caused a ruckus a few months ago on YouTube with his film short entitled Dear White People. Definitely reminds you of a work by Spike Lee. It has that kind of vibe. This young man is coming through on Sunday. We must implore our audience to check this out. It's going to be a heavy hitter. You've got to see the trailer, first of all. Check out this trailer / film short on YouTube entitled Dear White People. I think it's nearing a million views, but it was quite a few write-ups on this film. Pretty interesting. There's a lot to talk about with him. And, of course, The Comic Shop with Daryl B. at 6 p.m., Justin Simeon at 7 p.m. Check us out on Sunday. Let's go on out with Thin Ice, Lenny Kravitz. See you on Sunday.
Well.